Welcome to Bootstrap MD, the Physician Entrepreneurs Podcast, your source to help you, the entrepreneurial doctor, live life on your own terms. Get new ideas and inspiration to help you find more balance in your professional life. If you're ready to get the knowledge without all the hype, you've come to the right place. It's the Bootstrap MD Podcast. And now your host, Dr. Mike Wu Ming.
Hey guys, this is Dr. Mike Wu Ming. Welcome to another edition of Bootstrap MD, the podcast for physician and healthcare entrepreneurs. From time to time, I love to spotlight physician entrepreneurs who are out there in the trenches making a difference into the world. And I've got another amazing guest that I'm sure you're going to get a lot out of. He is an internist and general geriatric medicine physician turned entrepreneur, driven by a mission to democratize healthcare. As the co-founder and CEO of Base 10, he launched an infection control clinical decision support software that is used by over 150 nursing homes during the COVID pandemic. The software has generated over $35 million in revenue over 3 years before the company was eventually acquired. He also co-founded Imosphere, which tracks social determinants of health for over 7 million mental health patients in the UK, Ireland, and Scotland. He currently serves as the Chief Strategy Officer for Northwestern Feinberg School of Medicine, Institute of AI and Medicine, while now leading Rise, an insurance company whose health plan solution is redefining healthcare coverage for independent physicians and medical practices nationwide. Other than that, he really hasn't done a lot. I want to introduce to the program Dr. Michael Fagg. Michael, it's a pleasure to talk with you today.
Thank you, Mike. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah. And as an aside, we're also going to be speaking at the upcoming PIMDCon.
That's right.
Which is happening in Southern California. So we'll be glad to meet you in person. And I'll do a little bit of plug as I work with Peter. So if you haven't registered, be sure to do so. And so you can meet us in the flesh. And I'm sure he'll be happy to meet other aspiring physician entrepreneurs. But Michael, let's get into this. You're a busy guy. And so tell me, how does a geriatrician, he end up becoming an entrepreneur? We'd love to hear about your journey.
Yeah, appreciate it, Mike. Honestly, like most of us, we didn't go to college and pre-med thinking we're going to be an entrepreneur. I really wanted to be a physician ever since I was 8, probably because my mom had a lot to do with that. But by the age of 12, I knew I wanted to take care of elderly people. I didn't know that was called geriatrics, but I knew by the age of 12, I wanted to take care of senior people. And that's exactly what I did. I went to Northwestern University, didn't do any skip years, went straight to med school, went straight into my internship and fellowship and achieved my dream, became an internist and geriatrician. And honestly loved what I was doing as a physician. But as we all know, when we start practicing, you start to see some of the brokenness of healthcare. And for me, that was how siloed the data was when it came to me trying to help my patients, right? There's only about 1,000 plus geriatricians in the country and 30 million Americans that are aging. So we really needed to be very efficient as a subspecialty of medicine in getting the data we need for these senior patients. And didn't have time, honestly, right? Like we were all busy. I was a new father and trying to be a good husband among trying to be a physician. So I didn't have time to go back and get a master's in informatics. And keep in mind, my major was cell molecular biology. I didn't major in computer science or programming, didn't know how to code a single line of anything, but just took the opportunity to talk to the EHR vendors, right? This was back in 2008 when all the hospitals were having to be told to be digitized, right? And most physicians were yelling at the vendors, like, how come this button doesn't work? And I was actually not yelling. I was like, oh, how come that button doesn't work? Teach me why. Show me why this data doesn't, if I entered it here, how come it doesn't show up here for the nurses? And they actually taught me a lot about data architecture, and this is the way we built the code. So this is why it takes a while for us to change the software, even though we understand the data needs to be in front of that person. It's going to take us a couple of weeks. So I ended up learning from the software folks themselves. And that's how I ended up foraying into informatics as a side gig. Learned enough, in fact, to become the director of informatics for Indiana University Health System for a number of years, despite, like I said, not having had the chance to go back to get a master's in informatics. And from there, of course, once you're in the informatics world, once you're in the data world, especially in the last 20 years, technology and entrepreneurship became part of the next journey.
So that's interesting. And what a lot of physicians want to know is what led you to like jump in? Because I don't know about you. I had no training in business. I don't know if you've had an MBA or maybe there entrepreneurship in your family or what sparked it for you?
So yeah, no, didn't get an MBA either. I got a fun story around that later, but didn't, again, too busy to even go back and get an MBA. I think what we physicians are really good at, right? So folks ask me that a lot. How do I get into it? And I always say this, with all that you had to endure to make it through the gauntlet of becoming a physician, the med school, the internship, you gained a lot of the soft and hard skills that's needed to be an entrepreneur, to be a business owner. It's just that in our particular profession, we have applied those in a very narrow lens of what we do. But think about it. In order for you to become a doctor or to get through your day, how efficient are you at organization? How efficient are you at basically aggregating large amounts of information and then quickly identifying what's relevant and what's not relevant to come up with a diagnosis and then even a plan for a patient? How amazing is your communication skill that in 2 minutes of you entering a patient's room, you have to make them comfortable and be able to agree to everything you want them to do for the rest of the day? And in 5 minutes after that, communicate that entire plan to the nurse, the social worker, the case manager, right? And the pharmacist. Like, you have to be incredibly good at what you do. And those are the same skill sets that, quite frankly, as I started building companies, I realized that those are the same skills I needed to run a good business. Now, of course, we need additional knowledge, right? So if you're going to be running a business of anything, quite frankly, whether it's a medical practice or a med device, right? Or even if you were saying, I'm going to do real estate, there's knowledge that we have to learn, but you're also the best at learning knowledge because we had to learn, right, how to deliver babies in a month. We had to learn how to close sutures and do ER procedures within a month, right? We only have 1 month to learn every single rotation. So you are already naturally selected as a type of individual that can ingest large amounts of information and master it in a very short period of time.
This is very fascinating too. And I really want to delve deep into this, Michael, because a lot of physicians get very frustrated with lots of things that we do at work, with software, with the flow, with insurance companies, starting your own company, because that is a big leap. And that's something that I've worked with aspiring entrepreneurs who said, yeah, we found a lot of flaws in medicine, but only a certain number decide that they want to do something about it.
I think for me, I really was one of those types. So when I decided to become a physician, you asked me earlier, do we have tools in my family? I'm the only physician in my family, right? The rest of my family members are all business folks. Honestly, all business folks, actually. And to me, as a family, we already talked about how it would be so nice if somebody in the family understood medicine, because whenever the older generation of relatives got sicker, right, despite their business knowledge or my dad being a very successful financial entrepreneur himself in his days, he had a hard time understanding what was happening with grandpa, what was being explained, or what are the choices of medicine. So the family's always said, it'd be great if somebody in the family was a doctor. Now, for me, that was my personality. If I saw a problem, I want to solve it, right? If I saw a need, I want to fill it. And for an early on part, I was, yeah, let me be the family for physician for the family to help the family out, right? And as I became a physician, I would say, there's a gap in the way that we can care for senior patients, and I want to figure out how to fill that gap. Then it became more, how do we do that at scale? Because there's so many of them. How do we do that when I'm asleep or when I'm not there? And that's when I started to get into technology as the way to solve. But I think all of us have it is a decision. You have to feel that problem is really relevant to you. And you have to convince yourself that I'm the only one that can solve this. And I would say that in honesty in healthcare, really as a physician, you are the only one that can solve it, or you're at least the best one to solve that problem. And if you don't do it, someone else is going to try, but it's probably not going to be the best. If that's the push you need, then tell yourself that I'm the only one that can do this, and that will give you the push to jump in.
Now, a common question that you get, I get this all the time, is are you still seeing patients? And if not, what led you to decide to do that? Because that, again, is another one of those big decisions that many physicians have a hard time grasping.
Yeah, like I said, when I became a geriatrician, that's little kids wanting to be astronauts, right? I did not want to stop seeing patients. So for the 10, 15 years while I was building software companies and so forth, I still practice full-time as a physician.
Wow.
And in fact, there's two quick comments I'll say about that, right? When you're practicing as a physician, one of the things our salary affords us to do is we can actually use a bit of our salary very easily to build our startup, right? You'll hear other startups going out there and pitching and competing for $10,000 in prize. That for us is maybe 2 weeks of night shifts. Right. So you can fund your own startup much easier with your physician work than anything else. Now, I'm not saying you should do that forever, but if you were trying something, it's much easier to fund it yourself. You have colleagues who are fellow physicians who, if they like what you're doing, can probably throw in another $10,000 with you to do something. Right. So we have a nice professional community as physicians that can support us in our entrepreneurial journey. No, I wouldn't say that you have to give up your physicianship to pursue your entrepreneurial dream. But I did practice all the way through. The story behind that is I actually practiced all the way until 2021 in the midst of the pandemic. What happened was 2 years before the pandemic happened, you mentioned earlier about my company Base 10. So 2 years in 2017, I had this concept where as a geriatrician who was very busy, right, but I'm also trying to help patients in the nursing home, but I'm not at the nursing home all the time. So it was very frustrating for me that a lot of time was spent on the phone with a CNA who was doing her best, right? She's not a diagnostician. She's just saying, hey, Dr. Fang, Mrs. Jones having throwing up. She's having fever. She's right. She's trying to give me the symptoms. And the two of us are then on the phone trying to go into the EHR and figure out all the information. And then me finally saying, okay, I think it's this. We should probably order an x-ray and a blah, blah, blah. And that always took so much time. And I said, why can't we have something that's like Google Maps for that, right? For clinical decision support, where you know you're at point A, which is your symptoms, and your point B is your differential diagnosis, and the software goes in the chart and confirms your symptoms and your potential diagnosis and then tells you what to order next. So that's actually what we started building in 2017. So we built that platform, believe it or not, and at the end of 2019, we started piloting it in some nursing homes. And of course, 3 months after we started piloting it, COVID hits the nation and everything was shut down and the nursing homes were burning up with cases, right? So our platform was perfectly there to basically collect all the symptoms. The software would then match the symptoms. So you say cough, is there another way someone would say cough, right? In the chart, timestamp those and then be able to verify that, yes, there's some symptoms going on. If the differential diagnosis is pneumonia versus flu versus fever, then the software would say, okay, we need to order a flu test versus an x-ray versus a sputum culture versus a COVID test once they'll start to come out. And what was great was that with basically a handful of nurse practitioners, literally a handful of nurse practitioners in our laptop, we were able to evaluate 1.7 million plus cases of infections in 150 nursing homes nationwide. What we also accomplished was in all 150 nursing homes that were using our platform, didn't matter if they were in a red state or blue state or what they believed or what their policy were around PPEs and vaccinations at that time, all 150 nursing homes had 30% less death from all-cause infection and COVID during the 3 years of the epidemic. And I was still seeing patients at that time as a physician, but see the numbers. I was like, okay, I am killing myself trying to see patients during the day. I'm seeing like almost 50, 60 patients just running through the nursing home, trying to triage whatever can. In the meantime, my software with five nurse practitioners is dealing with 50,000 cases per month. So at the end of the as you mentioned earlier, the company did make a lot of money. We made literally $30+ million in the span of 2 years, right? The timing was, of course, there and the software had a relevance to the pandemic. So, of course, timing was very important. But when I looked at that and said, okay, it isn't that I want to give up seeing patients, but this is what I'm talking about. I love patients, but I can only see 60 of them in a day. I can only maybe save the life or change the life of 60 patients a day. But if I did something correctly, if I led the development of a technology platform, I can affect 1.7 million patients. And that is where at the end of 2021, I said, you know what? I think I need to focus on this. I would love to go back and I still think about that. In fact, I'm still exploring maybe with partners going back and having a private practice somehow. It's just that I feel bad because I would not be a very contributing partner at this point in time. But I feel that with what I'm doing, I can make a bigger splash across and really change the needle. The course of the needle for senior care in US.
Yeah, that's a beautiful story. And it obviously COVID was devastating for many on in there, but in times of disruption, that's when entrepreneurs really flourish. And we see that time and time again, not only in Europe, but this whole telemedicine. And it just, I think it was a wake up call in medicine is there's a better way to do things.
Yep.
Now we're in this restricted environment. Yeah, maybe we don't need to do the ways that we did this 20, 40, 50 years ago. It was a success. Financially, it was a success. Career-wise, it was a success. Most people say, oh, I can go now to the Bahamas. I can rest on my laurels. Doesn't sound like that aspired to you.
So no.
What happened to that?
Like I said, I'm a guy who, when I see a problem, I just can't let it go, right? As I mentioned, even though I stopped my clinical practice in 2021 when the pandemic started to lessen up, right? So towards the end of 2022, starting 2023, I started looking and say, okay, I sold my company and yes, I could go take a nice break. And we did. I took some time off to take care of my family and they've sacrificed a lot during the pandemic for me as well. But I started looking at going back to practice, actually. Like I said, I started talking to partners saying, hey, how are you guys doing? And maybe we should partner up on opening up a new clinic. And as I started to speak to more and more of my colleagues, something came up, which was actually not related to technology. It was really more just a simple unmet need. Hey, in starting our own practice, we need better health insurance. We need health insurance to cover ourselves and our family. In fact, if we're going to be small business owners of our own little medical practice, we need to think about how to get benefits for covering our employees. And this is where we realized that doesn't make any sense, right? Because we are the most medically educated profession, including our staff at our clinic. Yet we're probably paying some of the highest rates to use insurance because you're a small business. You're not a big corporation. You don't have the number of employees to get a discount from a broker, right? So we're paying for some of the highest insurance while using it the least. And for a lot of physicians I spoke to, health benefits next to payroll and perhaps the rent for the office was like the third or fourth most expensive item on their business P&L statement, right? So I said, that doesn't make any sense. So again, I found a problem and I couldn't let my mind go. So I was like, there's got to be something that someone must have solved this, right? So first I tried to talk to the big insurance companies and say, hey, we did this. Would you give us, nope, no discounts because you guys are all small businesses. Okay. What about all these other industries like the Fortune 500 companies, the tech companies, the hospitals who have their own health plans? Could we put together a health plan of our own, or has somebody put that together that we can join? The answer is not really, right? The hospitals have their own health plan. The big corporates have their own health plan. Private equity has their own health plan that they use, they sponsor themselves for their employees. But we as a small business have never grouped together as a community to do. And once I realized, okay, don't want to build something if it's already been built. But once I realized it wasn't built, that's when I decided that I'm going to commit to building RISE and taking out that one little factor, right? Because honestly, like if you got enough to think about when you're as a physician to say, hey, should I go independent? Should I leave the big hospital safety, or should I leave the academic safety and finally start on my own practice and have my own decision as what I want to do and the patients I want to see and right, so on and so forth. And the last thing you should have to think about in weighing that decision is, oh man, I should stay at my job because I still need health insurance. That's not even a golden handcuff. That's just bad handcuffs. So I wanted to take that out as a decision gate, basically, for all physicians, so that at any time, if you want to start your own business, at least your own family and your and health of your employees and their families wouldn't be the one that's weighing you down in making that decision.
Yeah, it's funny. I deal with aspiring entrepreneurs and say, I want to start my own business. I want to build something of my own, but this health insurance is really good at this, and realizing it's, they just don't have the information and education and with why. So what are some of the things that maybe surprised you about getting into this big insurance behemoth, to helping the little guy out? Was there any challenges that you had starting out?
RISE has been a 3-year work in the process, right? And it's probably going to take us another 7 years to get to where we really need to be. And that is to be the foundational health insurance for all independent physicians. A lot you learn along the ways. It would be difficult for me to summarize all of that in the short time that we have together, but the first thing you learn about is whether there are biases that you had about insurance as a business that is true or false. I hate to say it, there's a lot of things that we have as biases that are not biases, they're actually true about the insurance industry. And then you have to be able to learn about that and then say, okay, I'm going to make a very different decision. One of my physician friends had this amazing term that I borrow all the time. She said, sometimes as physician entrepreneurs, we have to make the decision to be the benevolent dictator, right? You have to be able to learn enough about how a game works. You have to be able to dominate the game. But then as the person dominating that game, you then make it fair for everybody, right? And that is, I would say, in a nutshell, a lot of what we had to figure out in the last 3 years in building RISE is, what are the games that are being played in health insurance world? Which one of those are regulation and therefore a good reason? And which one of those are somebody made a business decision, right? But it became pervasive, right, as the business decision. And can we not make the same business decision in order to effectuate a greater change and build a better health insurance product for independent physicians? Those are the things we had to learn. But again, I think at some point you say some physicians see this and they're like, how do I get involved in that? I'm like, it's like any other muscle, right? Like when I first had to lose weight, and I'd get up every morning to run. The first 2 weeks was just so painful, right? I get to wake up in the morning but then you keep doing it and it becomes just easier and easier. And again, these are skills we've already done. Like the first time you had to get up and go prep the patient for surgery, or the first time you had to, right, think about doing a case study, or you had to do a medical chart review, right? It was painful, but you do it and you do it and it becomes easier and easier as time goes on. And eventually you don't even think about it. It just becomes something that you can do very naturally.
So let's get into the nitty gritty. How does Rise Health works? We've got a number of physicians on here. They're starting a practice. Is there a criteria? Who would be best served by using your company?
Yeah. So we're really catering to a lot of the independent individual physicians, right? So we know that, especially since the pandemic, a lot of physicians are starting to explore very unique career paths, right? We always know there's been locums. Sadly, I didn't even know my locums friends didn't have health insurance. I only found out after I started building Rise. They said, no, when you work for a locums company, they don't pay for your health insurance. You have to get your own. There are physicians now doing pure telehealth. There are physicians doing direct primary care, right? So those physicians who are saying, hey, I'm literally a army of one with my own little practice LLC doing my medical practice, those are the folks that we could really help with Rise. As time has gone on in the last couple of years, we also started working with medical practices. Now, that gets a little bit harder, but right now we're able to work with medical practices that are anywhere from 50 to 100 or larger. In fact, we have some medical practices talking to us that are 400 to 600 employees. Now, I know that's not the most of us. Even when I had my medical practice, I had 15 employees. But we're working from the both ends, right? We're helping some of the very big, large medical groups who, believe it or not, are still not getting great health insurance, still getting, for lack of elegant way of saying it, screwed over by the big payers whenever they have to renew their yearly employee benefits for their hundreds of employees. They're still not getting the best price. So we're helping them. But then the individual physicians, those ones were really good at helping. And then we're starting to close the gap in the middle with practices that are like, well, we only have five employees or 10 or 15 or 25. We're starting to close the gap closer and closer on that. Hopefully by Q1 of 2026, we'll be able to help everybody, regardless of what size medical practice that you're in.
Can you share me like a case study or some people that you work with, how it Rise has really helped them out in terms of their insurance?
Yeah. So the way Rise works is what we call a health captive. And health captive means that we're a private health insurance company. We're not taking federal dollars. We don't take CMS dollars, which allows us to make our own rules, right? And allows us to make our own program. When you're a part of the fully insured plans, like that's on the health marketplace, for example, you're subsidizing, number one, as an employer or as a physician yourself, the potential cost of Medicaid and other types of patients in that population. So by us just grouping ourselves together, we're already taking ourselves out of that risk pool. So that automatically drops your premium significantly because, again, as physicians, we know that you're much more conscious of your health. You have the financial means to take better care of your health. So you're already in a different risk pool than the average American. So by taking ourselves out of that risk pool, our premiums are already going to drop. Like I said earlier, we can also make better decisions. So we can do medication programs that doesn't have to go through PBMs and wholesalers and rebates, which some of us have heard about that drives up the cost of medications, right? So as Rise, we said, no, we're not going to work with PBMs. We're not going to go through, or if we do work with a PBM, we get to select the ones that are very transparent and doesn't play the rebate game. We as insurance company don't want to play the rebate game. And how can we get closer to the pharmacy or even the manufacturers themselves? So we're able to bring down, for example, the cost of our specialty medications, the drugs that typically can be hundreds, if not tens of thousands of dollars. We're able to bring that down by 50% for our members. So wow. If you needed a drug, and let's say Skyrizi as an example, Skyrizi is usually $20,000. For us, it's like $8,000, right? Wow. So we're able to take care of our physicians and their families or their colleagues who may have a GI disorder and need it, right? Or even the GLP-1s. Like I hear some pretty high numbers on the GLP-1s. I won't say what our numbers are on this call, but we're able to bring that down by 30, 40%, right? These are the kind of things that we can do once you're your own health plan. And with the type of community that we're servicing, which is medical professionals, we're able to help save a lot of money for them.
I want to talk about WeCare IPA. What is it about? Why did you start it? Tell us all about it.
Yeah, WeCare actually is a partnership. So one of the friends I reached out to, Dr. Lisa Ang out in New York, WeCare IPA actually came from her. She's the founder of WeCare IPA. And as I was talking about joining her and helping her with her practice, that's when I learned about the plight of health insurance. And that's where Rise actually came out of. But as Rise started to grow, Lisa and I became really close friends. And I said, hey, look, you have an amazing passion for independent physicians. She's a DO OB-GYN. She's always been practicing by herself. And she's always been advocating for New York physicians to be independent and helping with the policymaking there. And I said, I'd love to take what the spirit of WeCare. I love the name, like WeCare. Nothing says WeCare like what we were doing for you. So we wanted to take WeCare IPA and make it more of a national community. And that's what we're doing. With Rise and WeCare, it's almost two sides of a coin. Rise is providing an unmet need in terms of health benefits to help you get into independent practice. But WeCare as a community provides the additional support, right? So this is where we provide additional members benefit. I mentioned about the specialty drug program earlier. When we realized we could lower drug prices by 40% as a health insurance company for ourselves, we said, why can't we offer the same prices to our members for their other patients? Why do you have to be a RISE patient in order to get access to cheaper medications? So we actually turned our specialty pharmacy into a WeCare member benefit. So you can join WeCare. If you don't need RISE insurance, so be it. I'm not here to hard sell you on insurance, right? But if you don't need RISE health insurance, and let's say you're a rheumatologist or a neurologist or a GI doctor or cardiologist, and you are ordering these specialty meds, or you're a family medicine doctor trying to help patients with weight loss and you're starting to use GLP-1s as part of your regimen, right? You can actually sign up at WeCare and get access to the same pricing from our partners, our specialty med partners on those medications that we get at RISE as insurance. So think about if Blue Cross Blue Shield actually opened up their pricing of their drugs to you as a doctor. I'm sure they're not getting the same price of drug as you are. So Imagine if they opened up their pricing to you as a physician to use for United Healthcare. They will never do that, but we are. And again, because we're not in the same game. We're not here to be an insurance company. We're here to be a community of supporting physicians and their independents. Insurance just happens to be one of the things you need. But if it's not what you need, we are happy to open up other resources to you via our WeCare community.
I love it, what you guys are doing. The independent physician is a dying breed. Again, I have many colleagues who are a bit into these big health companies.
Hospitals employ thousands of us, and
it just seems harder and harder to do that. So with RISE Health and with WeCare IPA, we are able to, you guys are helping
we
us.
We want to reverse that trend, Mike. We want to reverse that trend. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I understand the trend. I've read the same articles from American Hospital Association. I get it. That is what's been happening. But that's what happens when the physicians don't have the support that they need, right? As a foundation or as a community. But this is why I love what you're doing on the podcast and letting folks know about the possibilities of what they can do. Yes, plug in for PIMD as well, right? Great community there and teaching physicians the way that they can become financial free. And we certainly hope that with RISE and WeCare, we can provide yet another missing piece so that the day arrives, you want to be your own entrepreneur and be your own boss, you can.
Yep. And I think we are seeing it also though, again, with COVID, through the growth of telemedicine. I got a number of doctors now who are working. They're doing 1099 work, working for a bunch of different companies in there, but they don't have health insurance. So this is going to really help them out. So before we wrap up, I just wanted to give you some rapid fire questions on here, keeping you on your toes.
All right.
And come to PIVCon. You can talk to Michael in person, but just a few questions here. So what is the best advice you could give a doctor who wants to start something outside their clinical practice?
I would say the best advice I would say is we as physicians tend to research way too much. And that's just part of our occupational hazards of being in academic rigor for so many years, right? We tend to read and read before we do something. And I would say most businesses, you learn by doing. And again, this, right, you can read all you can about doing a surgery or a suture or delivering a baby, but nothing changed. Nothing really gets your hand right in terms of experience. When you get in there and deliver your first baby or do your first surgery or take care of your first code, nothing you read helps you with that situation, right? And I would say that is the same of any business that you are thinking about. Jump in. You're gonna make mistakes. Like our attendings used to tell us that you're gonna screw up, right? But that's part of it, right? And you just have to jump in and try and know that mistakes will be made. But you are in a very good situation as someone with, like I said, all the hard skills and soft skills. And even some of the financial cushion of being a physician with our salary to be able to cushion against some of those failures. So if there's somebody that could afford to fail and learn quickly, it's you.
I always tell my clients, you can't treat life as a double-blinded placebo study. If you're the only one who can let go, it's you. You can't hide in the call room and research it. It's on you.
Yep.
Productivity is something that we all have challenges with. Do you have any productivity hacks or tools that you use as a physician entrepreneur?
I'm a little bit different. I know there's a lot of physicians who are really, now there's a heavy trend and I love it. I see the effect of it. Maybe I should jump on the trend. But a lot of physicians do outsource to virtual assistants. I think a lot of my colleagues have used that and with great feedback. I myself haven't, but I'm a little bit OCD. And I love playing with technology, so I leverage AI a lot. So I really teach myself some of the AI tools and using ChatGPT and or other AI tools to automate my day, right? And that gives me, again, I love tinkling with these kind of technologies. So it gives me a chance to really learn by getting my hands dirty. And it allows me to customize the systems to my specific needs, right? Versus with a virtual assistant, I may have to train her, and if she doesn't work, then I have to get another one, right? So for me, it was easier to work with some of these AI tools. And I do really encourage a lot of physicians, if you haven't started even using any of these AI tools, please get into it, because again, it will change the way we practice as medicine. So it would be a good time in terms of productivity to start using some of these AI automation.
Are there any books or any podcasts that you listened to early on that inspired you to become an entrepreneur that you could recommend to other physicians?
Oh boy, I did a lot of reading back in the day. Here's what I would say. You know how when you're traveling at the airport and you're busy and you're just waiting for a flight to happen? I used to read a lot of the Fortune and Inc. magazines, and I would always flip to the articles that's about the founders or the CEOs. Now, they're not going to be physicians, but it was always great reading about the stories of those folks and to be able to find similarities between what they're doing or what they've experienced in their life and the challenges they're trying to do and tie that to what you did. Even if it's, oh, I had to do something similar to get into a residency, those challenges are real, right? And they apply. Again, those inspiring stories really made a difference for me. One of my other favorite books, though I'm not sure if it's 100% relevant, is I love this book called The 48 Laws of Power. And it was by Robert Greene. I'm a history fan, so I love whenever someone can say, here's an example of how to, do the right politics like the Romans did or Napoleon took over power. Like this is how they did it. And The 48 Laws of Power was very interesting because as physicians, we tend to want to be a team player, right? So we want to say, I know my area and I really want to let other people who has, right? And that's fine. But it's also where I feel in healthcare as a profession, because we are of that personality where we say we're humble and we say, we don't really know that, but maybe someone else should do it. And somebody does. But here's the thing, that person may not know it any better than you do. Okay. And the other thing too, is we tend to be good students, right? So we tend to feel that if we show our work, eventually we'll be praised and promoted. And that's not what happens in entrepreneurship. It's the person who knows how to obtain power that can get up there, right? So you sometimes see, and we can all say this, right? We can all name a colleague who were like, yeah, we don't know why he became the CMO, but he really got on the good side of the board or the CEO, right? I'm not saying he's right or wrong. I'm just saying, but that he knew how to play the power, right? So that is a book that I would read with just an open mind. Not all the examples in there are necessary, like morally on the right side of things, but it does show you how folks potentially got in power, or at least how to protect yourself from having power taken away from you, right? Because that really is something that I see is an important part of what we need to do as physicians. We talk about, oh, we got to take back power. We got to take back power. There's a unique way to do that, and we need to learn how.
That's funny because I have that book in my library there, but I didn't finish it because some of them, yeah, they really get into depths, but it's a great book.
It's a fun book to read.
It is a fun book to read. And also, in the other example that you gave, I used to love getting the Inc. 5000 and the Inc. 500 and just like seeing all these companies and what it, if you're not familiar, it shows you they get chosen based upon how much growth that they've done in their company. And it just gives you just more success stories. And what I like to do is to see which ones actually stay on the 5000 list.
Yes.
Those are the ones that have figured out a pivot and be sustained. Yeah. Michael, this has been tremendous. Thank you for sharing everything. Any last minute words before we end the call today?
No, thank you so much, Mike, for the time. I love your podcast. I've watched a few of those in the past as well. Always appreciate you featuring physicians. I think you being the voice of letting and giving a platform for us to let others know that, hey, you can do what we've done. If we did it, and like I said, I had no MBA training, right? None of this background. If I could do it, you could do it as well. And I just really wish everybody the best of luck and that they find their passion. And like I said, don't hesitate. Just go ahead and pursue it.
Wonderful. Michael, this has been fantastic. And for doctors who are ready to explore what Rise Health is all about, what it can do for them, I know a number of independent physicians are listening on there. Head over to risehealth.com/bootstrapmd where you can learn more all about it. And again, another plug, if you're going to be at PMDCon, we'd love to see you and get to know you as well. This has been very inspiring for me and for my listeners. Again, for those listening, again, you're going to have your ups and downs as an entrepreneur. Do something a little each day to get you closer to your goals and keep moving forward.
You've just listened to the Bootstrap MD podcast. For more valuable resources, as well as past recordings of our show, check out our website at bootstrapmd.com. Now, let's get to work.